This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From Trackhall Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. I'm Jeremy Scott. It's going to be a Charlie Light day, but, you know, it is what it is because we got a lot of great guests. First off, we have Kiffin Simpson, who is the most recent winner in FR Americas. He's one of many drivers who have swept the first weekend. Can he continue the streak throughout the rest of the season? Then following his first weekend as promoter for F4 and FR Americas, Tony Perella sits down with us, talks about the challenges regarding that weekend and how he sees the rest of the season going. And then this is an interview you definitely want to listen to. It's Tim Crawford. He's the father of Jack Crawford. Now, Jack Crawford runs the Red Bull Junior team. He's going to run this year in F3 and Euro Formula. Talks to us about how one gets connected to a Formula One team to run in the junior program. Now, there's different programs, different academies, and we'll talk about that, and you'll hear the differences between the two of them. And Charlie comes back, and he and I talk about the most recent round in the Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series at Richmond Raceway. So as always, you can leave us voicemail at 815-714-9260. Email us, insideopenwheel@gmail.com. We are working on getting a website, so that email will change. Keep that in mind. And you can follow us on Facebook and tweet us on Twitter. All right, Charlie, so we're about a couple weeks away from the races over at Barber Motorsports Park. This weekend, FRP, a series you race with, they're racing at Carolina, and they have one race under their belt as of right now. I've got to pull up the results on Race Monitor, but from what I heard, it was an interesting race, per se. Let's see here. And that was at Carolina Motorsports Park. I know a track you said you've been wanting to go to. Just try it out.
I never raced there, but I drove there once.
That's
actually
right.
In my first team test as a signed driver.
And that was under the John Walkel Racing Group, right?
Correct.
Okay. So here's the results from today's races. It was just a 1600. Kometchis was your winner. Jonathan Lee second. Hugh Esterson in third. In the Masters, it was Robert Perona, Scott Rubenzer, and Mike Scanlon. Now, what was interesting is Nicholas DiOrlanzo was your pole sitter. He finished 13th. And Joey Barinza had a good stranglehold on the lead, but four laps to go. He was hit by a competitor, according to Exclusive Autosports Twitter feed. But he did log the second fastest lap. So, your results, I think he's third by the looks of this, but nonetheless, you can watch the races on Race Monitor, the 1000s, 1600s, the 2000s, and I don't think the Atlantics are coming, and Formula V. So we'll have the full results from that. Now, we don't have a series preview because Bob Wright, I've talked with Bob Wright, the man in charge of the series, and he said, look, I'm just seeing this as spring training. So it's spring training that pays points, basically, Charlie. So you're not missing too much for this first weekend.
Well, I'm missing a chance to drive at a pretty neat little track.
Well, you've got a couple pretty neat little tracks you can race at later in the season. So just think about that.
That is very true. I'm excited for those too.
Yeah. And there might be some big things coming. There might be some big things coming down the pipeline. All right. Let's talk about a couple of things with IndyCars. I turn off my ad blocker for the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We'll start off with the test at Texas Motor Speedway. Several teams and drivers went over to Texas to test. I know a lot of the rookies went over there to check things out. One thing that was interesting, Charlie, we've been hearing rumors that Cody Ware was going to be in the 52 car at some point. And we are hearing more and more that that is more of a possibility. We did hear confirmation from Dale Coyne that he will be at Indy in a couple of weeks for rookie orientation, the rookie orientation program, and that he might run a couple of road course races, which is interesting for a driver who has primarily been in stock cars.
Interesting.
So I'm the verdict's out. I'd love to sit down and talk with him and find out what his reasoning is behind the switch to run the IndyCar. I mean, Jimmy Johnson, he's retired. He's done all he can in stock cars. He's done all he can in off-road. So, he's there for fun. But Cody's in his mid-20s. So could it be okay, I've done stuff in stock cars, and now I want to see what I can do here in Indy cars. Nothing wrong with that, because the talent pool in Indy car has been fantastic.
Could it be, Jeremy, that our 2000s fantasy has come true and that IndyCar is starting to eclipse NASCAR?
I hope so. I really hope so. We'll see what happens here in the next couple of weeks. Of course, it's starting to become eclipse F1, too, if you take the Romain Grosjean and Pietro Fittipaldi news, you know. So,
well, I don't know. I may be getting a bit ahead of myself with that, but it's fun to think about.
All right. So Star Telegram is reporting that at the test, Texas Speedway still has a no-go zone for IndyCar drivers. And you may ask, well, what is that no-go zone? It's not the infield. It's not, you know, somewhere off of the back straightaway. It's actually in the turns. Remember back in 2019 when the SMI and NASCAR folks put down a compound called PJ1 Track Bite to help the stock cars race better? Well, it screws with the Indy cars. And I'm going to say it plainly. It messes with them big time. Charlie, your buddy Graham Murray Hall has described it as a no-go zone. Here's what he said to the Star Telegram. It's a no-go zone. When they repaved the track in early 2017 and used the lime wash, it was slippery. The first cup race they raced here, a lot of guys crashing. I remember talking to Jimmy Johnson about it. It's very slippery. Everybody here at TMS does a great job finding ways to find grip. Now, here's what's interesting about that. For an oval that consistently calls IndyCar their second home, they still haven't found a way to grab the PJ1 track bite. And longtime listeners of the show know how critical I am of Texas Motor Speedway. If it was any other track, if it was Indy, if it was Iowa Speedway, I would be just as critical. But if you're going to sit there and say, this is IndyCar's second home, you're doing a darn fine job, good job of telling it when you force your, you know, you force your second favorite series to run single file.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting. If you remember when my sim racing series was racing at Texas,
same thing.
We said that like turns one and two were the only place, like three and four, the grip from the tires is not the limiting factor. The only place where it's the limiting factor is basically turn two.
Yeah.
So you know, to exacerbate that with the low grip surface, it's kind of weird,
because we saw that's where most of the incidents were for that race. It was in turn two. Mm-hmm. That's where a lot of the incidents were for last year's Genesis 600, was in turn two. Here's what Ray Hall added. Unfortunately, the dark black stuff from the data we got is about 20% less grip than the bottom lane and a half, so it's still going to be a no-go zone.
You know what that kind of reminds me of? Do you remember the scene in Driven where Jimmy Bly was like on his computer in his motorhome, like trying to figure out how to go faster? And he played that like really like early 2000s, late 90s animation of the car going through the corner, and it, like the car spun out and this text came up on the screen and it was like 20% less grip or like 20% more speed, something like that.
I want you like, guys. Stuff that, I want you listeners to just log this in your memory. Charlie admitted he watched Driven.
Dude, you know what I'll say, as bad as that movie was? The names of the drivers are on point. Jimmy Bly, Joe Tanto, Bo Brandenburg, like those are race car driver names.
We've got
even more so, those are champ car driver names.
Have you ever heard Paul Page's story behind that?
I may have.
Next time we get him on, we're going to have you, we're going to do one of those interviews again. You've got to hear his story. He's got some good stories.
I think he told a story on Dinner with Racers about that.
Yeah, he told a story on Dinner with Racers. I hope we can get more of an in-depth one, because I've had, on the original podcast I did, it was on a internet radio show when I was in broadcasting school. I had him on and we talked about that, and it's pretty cool. But, yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how, and it's interesting too, because it's a doubleheader. So We'll see how that fares for the two races. Sticking in the IndyCar paddock, Sports Business Journal reports IndyCar secures Pfizer vaccines for industry ahead of the 2021 season. Adam Stern was the writer that yesterday, April Fool's Day, and it's not an April Fool's joke because IndyCar secured a batch of Pfizer vaccines for members of its industry's Roger Penske series looks to get back to normal in 2021. This is fantastic news, especially with the research coming out that instead of it being 95% effective, it's still 90% effective. And that was with the first responders who deal with this on a daily basis. And I think it was like, what, 60, 65% for the first shot alone? This is fantastic news for IndyCar.
Yeah, I think so. My dad is a retired physician, so he's been following this pretty closely. He told me that 2 weeks after your first dose, you're 80% covered.
Oh, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, so that's cool. I'm really excited about this. I got yesterday. So yeah, I'm excited to get back to racing at some point this year. And I think, you know, by the end of the season, I think that things in the US at least are going to be pretty close to normal.
Yeah, I would say after the 500, we will have some semblance of normalcy. I think some things are going to stay, but a lot of things are going to go. I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the year, the entire country is off their mask mandates. So this is huge news. If you haven't gotten your shot, please get your shot. If not for you, but for people around you. Some interesting news we did not touch on last week after the... we shouldn't touch on it at all because it came through the weekend. You remember talking about Juju Noda, the young driver from Japan. She was going to run under the Jay Howard banner. Now, she was fastest in Friday practice. It was the only practice of the weekend for the F4 drivers and FR as well. But after that, her and her team pulled out. There's no word yet on why they pulled out. But it sounds like that they are looking for another seat. And it's kind of sad because, like I said, she was showing speed. She was showing promise. She would have been on the pole. And with her having the Noda name, I think she would have done quite well this weekend in F4.
So she just did a practice session and that's it?
Yeah, practice session and then pulled out. No word on what the reason is. Here's a statement from her team. Noda Racing would like to confirm that the team has pulled out from round one of the Formula 4 United States Championship due to recent issues. While the team laments the present situation, the decision was taken keeping in mind Juju Noda's best interests in order to clear everything out. The team is convinced that our driver needs better circumstances that will allow her to just focus on racing rather than needing to deal with external problems. Regardless of that, she proved her speed by setting the fastest time during practice, being the only driver to set times in the 127s, which would have been fast enough to take pole position. We look forward to coming back to F4 US in the near future, and no further comment shall be made for the time being. So, as far
well,
as we
that didn't clear up, that didn't clear up anything at all.
Didn't clear up anything at all. But they're not going to talk about this, and I don't think we're going to hear about what happened. That's okay. Jay Howard with no comment. His team with no comment. But luckily for her, the next round isn't until the middle of May. So there's that.
Interesting.
So that'll be interesting. But I've got to say this. So American Caelan Frederick is going to race FIA F3 with Carlin last season. He was a British F3 champion. That's not the news I want to talk about. Charlie, have you seen the picture floating around of Caelan Frederick with Trevor Carlin?
I don't believe so.
Oh, if I can find this. Give me 1 second. Let's see if Autosport has it. No. Give me a second. All right, I've got to find this. I've got to say. Trevor Carlin. I've got to say this. Okay. Starts with a Y. Whatever. The man has an impressive beard. I am jealous of his beard. I've always looked up to Trevor Carlin because of, you know, how he's built his team. Remember, he was also set up to run in F1 when they added all those teams. But damn, that beard's luscious. And this is coming from someone who can't grow a good beard.
Me neither. That's why I stick with the stubble.
You stick with the stubble and the long flowing hair, which I can't even grow that. I tried.
Well, that The long flowing hair is just a symptom of not having a haircut in a year and a half.
I keep.
You better believe that's getting chopped off the second I get fully vaccinated.
Yeah. I can imagine. Yeah, I'll find the. I will find the picture because it is just it's amazing how his hair. I mean his beard is just nice and lush, but.
It sounds like you're very impressed with it.
I'm very impressed. Yeah, I'll find it. We'll talk about this during the wrap up of your race at Richmond coming up next. So we've got the weekend sweeper in FR Americas. It's Kiffin Simpson next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, if you caught our recaps over the weekend, we mentioned that we would have the weekend sweeper of the FR Americas at Road Atlanta on, and he's with us now. Kiffin Simpson joins us. He's essentially the points leader in FR Americas, won his first three races over the weekend with TJ Speed Motorsports. Kiffin, welcome to Inside Open Wheel. Congratulations. That's a hell of a way to start the weekend when you lead, what, two-thirds of the laps of all the races?
Yeah, it was a great weekend. The entire weekend, we were really quick, and we were just able to pull nice gaps in most of the races and just lead the race from the front and keep a good gap so that no one else could really get to us.
Well, and it's really no surprise that you did so well because of two things. One, you're paired up with Tim Neff, and two, you're with in equipment that basically was at the front all season long in FR Americas last year.
Yeah. Tim did a great job the entire weekend. We made a couple changes, even like from the first race, because we knew that there was still some more time to find as far as just in the setup. So we worked the whole weekend, even though we were running at the front, because we knew if Jordan got a little bit more time, then he'd be right there with us. So we were looking for some more time just in case, and he did a great job with that.
And that's in spite of not only losing time for testing Thursday because it was just so wet, losing time on Friday because of the issues with SVRA. So it wasn't a, you know, set up and go. It was more of a, okay, we've got to set up, wait, does this work, and then go, as you won the pole on Friday.
Yeah, I believe that the qualifying session was actually our first full dry session. Mm-hmm. So it made the entire weekend a lot more interesting because no one really knew fully like where they could push the track and the corners that had been wet in the session before. And it just made everyone come into the track a lot slower rather than how most people usually are getting their fast laps done within like the first five laps.
And exactly. That makes things a little bit harder because last year was your first season in Formula Cars, but you guys didn't race at Road Atlanta. So this is the first time that you actually saw it in race competition in spite of testing a good part of the off season there.
Yeah, one of the first times I tested the FR car was actually SCCA race at Road Atlanta. So I had driven it before in the car, and as you said, we had the testing a couple weeks before that, but we didn't look as good as we did at the race on that test weekend. So after the test, I was a little bit nervous that my teammates would be a good bit quicker than me at the race, but didn't end up that way.
Oh, and you also ran half the season in, you know, FR Americas last year for essentially, again, the same equipment that you have now. So that makes things a little bit easier in going from, you know, going from last year into this year.
Yeah, it does. Getting to know it last year was definitely a big part of just my learning curve and being able to learn how the car works and how the turbo kicks in and how the car rolls and all of the different aspects of the car and in race competition as well.
Kevin Simpson joins us on Inside Open Wheel. He is the first weekend sweeper of really the season anywhere here in the United States, as he won the first three races at Road Atlanta. And I want to talk real quick about race number two, because it seems like, from what I was able to gather on social media, Jordan Missig was just able to nail starts. He nailed that start on the second race. What is it like knowing that, oh no, I've got to get better starts so I can stay out front, and then all of a sudden, holy cow, I'm gifted a lead?
Yeah, it was interesting for sure, because in the first race I had a really good start and just drove off, but in the second race I dropped the clutch too quickly and it just spun the rears up a whole lot all the way down the straightaway to turn one. And by the time I got the wheels going, Jordan was already by the side of me and going by me. So I knew that I was going to have to drive a catch-up race with him. Mm-hmm. And after about the first lap, he had a pretty good lead. But after that, I started reeling him in a little bit more and putting pressure on him. And I tried a couple moves and they didn't really stick, so I just kept putting pressure on him, knowing that he would make a mistake eventually, because I could see how nervous his car was in a lot of areas because of how hard he was pushing the car. So I just kind of sat there and waited for something to happen or tried to make a move to get by him. But yeah, I could tell that eventually something was going to happen, but I didn't think it would be a full spin.
And, you know, obviously you're one of the first couple of you're one of the several drivers who have won, you know, swept a weekend at FR Americas. We've seen Linus Lundqvist do his thing. You know, there's just been a whole bunch of drivers throughout the years. Do you think that, especially with the team that you have now, that you can continue the trend of, you know, just going through and just almost running the table practically for FR Americas?
Yeah, I think that's definitely possible. I think that the weekend at Road Atlanta shows that we're one of the top teams and top competitors, so I think for sure it's definitely possible. I've also got my other teammates, Logan Cusson, who had a good weekend, and Varun Chokshi, who also had a pretty good weekend. And there's our new teammate, Baptiste, that also had a pretty good weekend considering it was his first time. So I think that the team's doing a great job, and it's just up to the drivers to make sure we put it together.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. You knew that you're going to have, you know, Varun in your team, Logan on your team, but at the last minute, it turned out you were having Baptiste on your team. What's that like working with somebody who's never seen the car before and trying to get them up to speed, you know, from the get-go?
Yeah, it's very interesting because he doesn't actually speak English very well. So we've got someone on the team who kind of helps translate for him, and he coaches him, and he's been doing a pretty good job. But I think that he's not the best at speaking French, because Baptiste seems to sometimes struggle with translations, it seems like. And so he's just slowly trying to figure out the car and how it works and just that regular trend. So,
and speaking of coaches, you have a great complement of coaches under your awning. You've got Victor Franzoni and Linus Lundqvist. Both are really quick. And you have open wheel sensation Roberto Moreno. So a wealth of experience right there under the TJ Speed banner.
Yeah, it's great to have them all there, and they're all very helpful. And usually when we're going over data and stuff, we each just go over with one person. But then after we go over data, we're always exchanging ideas, and everyone always helps each other out, which is great. And we all get faster because of it.
And you and I talked also on Sunday about having Tim Neff engineer your car, you know, basically being the team owner, and how big that has been for you this season, this past weekend, because you've worked with him before. So there's that chemistry there, and you can tell him, you know, what the car is doing, and he just knows what to do.
Yeah, it was like working with him last year, we got to know each other a lot, and we got to know how like each other think a lot more. And this year, we also got to figure out like he knows a lot how I like the car setup now. So this year, if someone is doing some setup on the team, and then he can usually tell like if I'm gonna like it or if I might want to put like a little bit more front or take away a little bit more front or something like that to make the car work more for me.
The next racetrack on the schedule right now, of course, as we know that all know that could change, that you've been to that you're very familiar with, is not until September at VIR. So you've got Road America, Brainerd, and Three Rivers coming up. How are you going to prepare for that, knowing you know two of the tracks you can probably test at, but one, you know, there's no chance of testing because you can't test at a street course?
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Road America, I've never been to before, and I don't think we have any plans to be able to go there. So it's just when we get there, got to make sure I'm on it, learning the track from session one, lap one. Same at Brainerd and same at Three Rivers. So it's just going to be watching some video of the track and trying to learn where the track goes and then just going for it from lap one.
Well, Kiffin, congratulations on your weekend sweep. How can fans follow you throughout the season?
Fans can follow me on, usually there is Race Monitor for the weekend, and also they can follow me on my Instagram at Kiffin Simpson.
Kiffin Simpson, congratulations. Points leader for FR Americas. Good luck, and try not to get too complacent during this long break until Road America.
Thank you.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, we continue with the FR Americas slant as we talk to the promoter of F4 and FR Americas, Tony Perella.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Sounds good.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, if you had a chance to listen to our recaps from the weekend, or you saw some of the action on the SVRA app, you saw how busy that the F4 and FR Americas season opener was, and it was the first under Perella Motorsports Holdings, with SECA still sanctioning the series. Tony Perella joins us on Inside Open Wheel, and a very busy weekend for you. Not only was it the season opener for F4 and FRA, you had the Atlanta Speed Tour, and you also had Trans Am on track as well. So a lot of action in Atlanta.
Oh, my God. And then let's throw in an occasional tornado, hailstorm,
yeah,
and whatever else Mother Nature could throw at us. But nonetheless, we got through it. It really was a big picture. It was a great weekend. Saturday, we had a great crowd. The weather really beat us up on Sunday, and Thursday and Friday, but Saturday really was a great race.
Yeah, I talked to a couple drivers on Thursday after the test day, and they're like, man, was it wet. We hope it's not going to be like this the rest of the weekend. And some of the pictures really showed how wet it was, but thankfully that Georgia clay kind of made things a little bit better with not getting too muddy out there.
No, the kids, I mean, you got to keep in perspective. The F4 drivers, I think the number was 18 out of 28. That was their first race.
Mm-hmm.
First time racing wheel to wheel. And so needless to say, I thought big picture, they did a good job. I would have preferred them to start out the weekend in the dry and get their feet under them before they got out there the first couple of sessions. But, you know, baptism by fire, as they say. The kids did, I think, overall a very good job. We had some incidents, but, you know, thankfully nobody was hurt. They just, their lessons learned, and that's part of it. But I'm really pleased with the enthusiasm. The team preparation looked great. These kids are, some of them show some real promise, real promise.
Yeah, that's one thing that I like about, you know, the F4 and FR America's format is you have a lot of talented drivers that move up through the ranks. We saw Kiffin Simpson with a 3-race sweep. Jason Alder, really racy, as well as Noel Leon. So there's going to be a lot of great battles, I think, in both series this year. And you got to hand it, too, as well to your scholarship drivers doing very well as well. Let's talk a little bit about that scholarship and you know, how that's looking so far this season.
Well, it's interesting. You know, it's clear the sport doesn't have enough women and it doesn't have enough kids of color racing. It's predominantly a white male sport. And there's some extraordinarily talented kids out there. So we started what we thought we were going to do was give a free season of free entry to either a young girl or a kid of color to race who wanted to go racing, had the aptitude to go racing, and frankly had the funding to take care of a team or get a car. And in that process, we came across Future Star Racing, Mark McAllister and Alora McAllister, and they were willing to fund the car side of it for kids who met the same criteria that I was looking for my scholarship. So we kind of teamed up in Chloe Chambers and Ernie Francis Jr. Ernie Francis obviously is my Trans Am past champion. And sorry about the background noise. welcome to my world from working at home. Ernie Francis is our past champion with Trans Am, but he's such a talented driver. We wanted to give him a shot at open wheel. And, you know, it was literally his first time sitting in the car was Atlanta. I mean, he got fitted the week before, and I think he ran one lap just to get the feel of the car at Charlotte. And then first time in the car was this weekend. And by his standards, he wasn't happy, but I can tell you when you looked at the second race, he was within a half a second of the leaders, and it was only that was maybe the second session that he had to drive dry track. So I think you'll see big things come from Ernie before the season's over. And then Chloe Chambers, you know, really had a good first outing. She's a talented kid, and I have big things. I think it's got a lot of potential. We also extended a scholarship to Emily Winscombe. She's part of Gary Orton's crew, and Pippa Mann has been coaching her. So, you know, we had some pretty amazing people. We had Pippa Mann's been involved coaching. You have Sarah Fisher involved coaching. You have little Al Ellinger Jr. coaching. I mean, that's some pretty big star power getting involved with these kids. So it's they're all part of those three scholarship winners are involved. So I'm really excited about the potential.
So it's great that you see, you know, current and former IndyCar drivers helping out with the, you know, the program. And you're also seeing the talent come through. And I know that I think Sarah Fisher had at least one F4 car in winter, you know, the preseason academy. Do we know if this, she's going to run a partial season in F4, or what's going to happen with that?
Sarah is coaching. Okay. Both Chloe Chambers, and she's also coaching Ernie Francis Jr. Okay. along with Al Unser Jr. They're, it's actually Sarah and Andy O'Gara is doing the prep work on the car, and Al Unser Jr. is actually doing driving coaching for those two. So it's neat. It's really neat. I don't think Sarah herself will get back in the car, but I think she has a young son that has the potential. He's just not quite old enough yet.
Well, you might want to watch those, her pace car driving, because she used to do that, at least used to do that for IndyCar. So your pace car driver might be out of a job too.
Yeah. She's terrific. It was great to see her. She's driven in my Indianapolis race that we have at the Brickyard and the V-Rock series, Vintage Race of Champions. And she actually won it a couple of years back, where they share a car in our group six, a Mustang Camaro or Corvette. We had to prop her up on a pillow. She couldn't see over the hood of the car. We had to prop her up a little bit. She went on to win the race. She's a very talented driver for sure.
Tony Perala joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Now, there's a huge gap between Road Atlanta and Road America, but if you look at the weather, you know, the past couple of days here in the Midwest, that's probably a good thing. It's a Spring Vintage Festival, May 14th through the 16th. And Road America for SVRA usually is a very popular event.
It is. We're going to have the vintage race. We'll have our vintage race, obviously. We'll also have IGT, our Porsche Ferrari group, racing with us. And then we'll have both FR Americas and F4 racing. In between, we had a West Coast swing. We'll be at Sonoma and Laguna Seca is with our speed tour stuff. But I'm not bringing the open wheel series out west this year. We were planning on it. In fact, we were going to do a doubleheader and have them at both races. But with so much uncertainty with COVID, and it was the first year with so many of these kids coming internationally, we adjusted the schedule, and we ended up moving the series to go to Brainerd, go to Road America, and go to Mid-Ohio instead of doing splitting it up over the West Coast. So it's, you know, in this environment, you have to be flexible with COVID, and that's what we're doing.
And speaking of that, Three Rivers scheduled for August 13th to the 15th. Have you talked to the Canadian government on whether or not the drivers and teams will be allowed for FR Americas?
Right now, it's still up in the air. They just extended another lockdown. So I have that. This literally was yesterday, I believe. So I have not circled back with the track and Three Rivers to see where they, how they see things, but we'll, that's on my calendar for this week to get some clarity on. So I don't, our backup plan is if Three Rivers isn't allowed to happen where we can cross into the border, then I will move the FR Americas to onto our Mid-Ohio race. We have a optional schedule set up that we can plug and play and have FR and F4 at Mid-Ohio like we did last year.
No, that's fantastic. At least, you know, I mean, we saw with last year how schedules need to be written in pencil. And this year, you know, it seems to be the same thing in spite of all these vaccines coming out. But want to start on a good note, end on a good note, I should say. We had Jonathan Green on our show last week. And I'll tell you what, the enthusiasm he has towards F4 and FR Americas is very palpable, obviously, with his show as well, Speed City Broadcast. So really, you know, you're changing the broadcast hands again, but it's still in great hands with Greenlight and the whole SVRA broadcast team.
I'm really building a great relationship with the Greenlight team. They've been involved with us through Trans Am for several years. And then last year, we launched our live streaming where they were covering the Speed Tour joint SVRA Trans Am weekends. And now with FR and F4 part of the mix, what a show, you know, it, and we've added so many features. We were using a technology, a wireless technology to broadcast, and it was, we really didn't know if it was going to work, and we're doing it in high definition. We got replays, we got live timing, you know, each race we add a new feature, it seems. And, yet for the fans that don't want to spend the $10 for the weekend to watch it live, they can watch it on replay on our social media channels the following week. So we're trying to accommodate all parties. Whether if you're really budget conscious, you still get to see the race in a tape delay mode. But if you want to watch it live, we have that ability, because we really, it's not inexpensive to have a couple of commentators and crew and drone coverage and all the things that we bring to it. But it really is a nice show, and it gives us a chance to promote the series at a level that we, no way they could have done before. So it's cool.
Yeah, being a commentator myself, I know the expense of a race weekend when it comes to broadcasting. Yeah. So it's not cheap.
No, and you know, when you consider that our broadcast time is usually starts at late morning on Saturday, runs through the end of the day, and then all day Sunday, you got a full day and a half of production costs. To watch it for $9.95 for buy the whole season for $59.95, and you get the magazine, Speed Tour magazine, the boot, that's a pretty good bargain from my perspective to have it live. But it's the same token, again, for those who are really watching, they're spending right now, I get that. We give them the option of just seeing it in a tape delay. So it's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, I've got to say, you were talking about the Speed Tour magazine. I just got that about a month or two ago, and I appreciate that. Thank you much. And it's great to see the articles in there and be able to read more about SVRA and all the series that you cover under the Speed Tour banner.
Yeah, it's come. I mean, just hard to believe, but this is our eighth year of publication. And Pam Shetra does such a great job as the editor of that magazine. And as we've added, and it used to be known as Vintage Racing Quarterly, but obviously when we had a Trans Am and IGT and FRF4, that doesn't really work anymore. So we just ended up branding all of our events Speed Tour. So now fans can watch it live on streaming, they can read about it, they can watch it tape delay, or they can at least read race coverage in a more in-depth coverage of the events post event in their magazine. So it's all part of the puzzle of raising the awareness, and it's a great platform for our sponsors that we connect. There's 19,000 people in that distribution now. 19,000, it's
wow.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited about to see it evolve. You know, people forget SVRA only ran 3 races in 2012, and this year we'll do 17, and next year we'll do 18 as a minimum because we'll be back at Indy. So it's good stuff. We have, in spite of the pandemic, we've done very, very well to keep the show going, keep everybody working, provide good racing, and work around the local guidelines. I mean, our tagline through most of last year is racing with us is safer than going to the grocery store. So we really tried to make that a reality by masking up and hand cleaner. You know, a lot of our processes where you wouldn't touch the same pen. Everybody got their own pen when they signed the waiver. I mean, we really temperature checks, you know, all this good stuff. Signage and reminders of social distancing. I think big picture, you know, I don't know the single person. We did 8 events last year, and we've already run 3 this year. And think about how many people make it to an event. I don't know of one person that's gotten sick at one of our events. So we're really diligent. I mean, some of that is just good luck and fortune. And now with the vaccines coming out and really starting to hit their stride, I'm excited. It seems like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. We're going to get back to some form of normalcy, hopefully by mid-year, I would think.
Yeah, I hope so as well, because I'd love to see more fans at the racetrack. Tony Perella, thanks for joining us. Don't forget that the Spring Vintage Festival at Road America, May 14th through the 16th, and you can still get tickets online for that, correct?
Oh, yeah, for sure. The track sells those tickets direct, a very easy ticket to buy, and it's a great show. I mean, you'll really see some good racing.
And Road America is such a beautiful facility. Tony Perella, thanks for joining us. We'll chat with you down the road.
Thanks so much for having me on, Jim. Appreciate it.
Coming up, we talk with Tim Crawford, the father of Jack Crawford. We talk about racing under a Formula One banner next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
And as you know, here in Inside Open Wheel, we do cover a lot of our Americans overseas in Europe. We talked to Juan Correa a couple weeks ago, but he was a part of an academy, and there are driver academies out there that are different than what we see here in the States. And to bring us light on what these driver academies are, what they do, is someone who knows very well about driver academies. He is the father of Jack Crawford, who is going to be racing overseas in a couple series. And Tim Crawford joins us on Inside Open Wheel. Tim, thanks for joining us. And it's great to have somebody with innate knowledge of these driver academies, because I'll admit, I don't know much, and it's something that I would love to learn.
Hey, Jeremy, great to join you. I listen to your podcast, and I really enjoy it, so happy to be here.
Oh, great to have at least some sort of fan here listening on the show, but let's start off with these driver academies. Now, here in the States, we see, you know, like Jay Crawford, for example, or not Jay Crawford, Jay Howard, has an entire ladder system from F4 to now Indy Lights. Michael Andretti with Andretti Autosport has an entire road to Indy ladder system, to basically a farm team. What is the difference between what we have here in the States and what a driver academy is for a Formula One team?
So the ones you mentioned, they're basically teams trying to fill seats. Now, it'll be interesting to see if Jay Howard pulls off what he wants to pull off by adding an Indy car at the end of it. But at the end of the day, I think they're mostly junior teams trying to sell seats. But to me, what you have in Europe is most similar to what you have in NASCAR. So in NASCAR, you have Toyota, in particular Toyota, you have Chevy, you have Ford. So you have the OEMs that support certain drivers. And, you know, the programs ebb and flow, right? You know, they get dollars, they get drivers. They move them up, they move them back and forth. So, you know, it ebbs and flows. But Toyota, Chevy, Ford pushing drivers towards NASCAR teams is really most similar to what you have in Europe with the F1 programs. So, you know, in Europe or in F1, you have really 10 teams, right? So each team has two teams in the paddock, or two cars in the paddock. So you end up with 20 cars total. That's how it is right now. There's no secret number about that. It could be more or less, but that's what you have right now. And out of those 10 teams, you really have two that don't have any association or any junior sort of program, and that would be Haas and Aston Martin. And, you know, I think Haas is just trying to survive right now. And I think Aston Martin, you know, they're, you know, I think they definitely could have a junior program at some point in time. But then you look at the other ones, and, you know, Ferrari, Williams, Renault or Alpine, Red Bull, Mercedes, McLaren, and all of those have some sort of junior affiliation. Although McLaren, they just, you know, they used to have a junior driver in Norris, and now they have a history of it, but they just signed an American to an option. I don't know if you saw that recently.
Yep.
But Ugo Chukwu just got signed to an option. And but if you were to take all the programs and you were to put them like on a line, like on a continuum, maybe in your mind you can look at it from left to right. On the left side, you would have ones that maybe are the most organized, and on the right side, you'd have the ones that are the least organized. And, you know, you'd start over there with the most organized, in my opinion. And really, this is my opinion. I mean, I know a lot about it because my son's involved in one of them now. And, you know, we obviously researched all of them. But at the end of the day, we don't really know exactly what contracts that everybody signs. Like even in the Red Bull program, you don't know exactly the deal that another driver has exactly. And that's true of every single program. So you don't know all the details, and anybody that comes on and tells you they know every single detail of every single driver, they just don't. And the programs themselves vary a lot too. And I was talking about Toyota and Chevy and Ford ebbing and flowing from year to year. And that's really the same in these junior programs for F1 too. They really change a lot from year to year. But if going back to my analogy of this continuum, you've got Ferrari on one side that's the most organized. They like to do camps. They like to get their drivers together. And I read somewhere that somebody called it like a kumbaya experience. And Ferrari really likes that kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You got Williams, who I say they're organized just because of what their juniors do. They only take super high level juniors that are old enough to assist them in F1 duties. And those F1 duties include simulation, race prep on the cars and things like that. Not prep from a mechanic standpoint, but, you know, just driving and some other things like that. So Williams, I say they're organized just because they only take F2 or top level drivers that can basically help them with their F1 responsibilities. I think Alpine is very organized, not as much as Ferrari, but they do like to get their youngsters together and do things. And, you know, they seem like more of an academy, right? So Ferrari, Williams, Alpine, I would call those academies. Then you kind of get to Red Bull that they're not really an academy. They're more like a team. Like their name is the Red Bull Junior Team, and they don't get together and they don't hang out and they don't, it's just more of an independent mindset. I think it kind of fits the Red Bull image a little bit better anyway. I mean, every man's kind of out for himself, and I mean, that doesn't mean they're going to get on the track together and not, not be pals or whatever, but they, you know, it's every man for himself kind of deal. It's kind of survival of the fittest kind of thing. And that's how I kind of think of the Red Bull program. So it's not nearly as organized. And then the two kind of on the other end that, you know, to be honest with you, we just don't know a lot about would be Mercedes and McLaren. And, you know, up till a week ago, you know, McLaren hadn't really had a youngster that they were propping up. And we still don't know that they're propping up. The word was that they took an option on him. But in the Mercedes world, it's really been a interesting couple of years for them. I mean, they started out about 3 years ago by picking up a couple of Carters, really young Carters. And now they've picked up a couple of older kind of mid-level junior single-seater guys. And their program it's not, I don't even think you can call it a program. I don't really know what it is exactly, but there seems to be one guy who goes around and he adds people to the mix. And I don't know if they're supported financially, and I don't know a lot about it, but it is, they are starting to have more drivers in their quote unquote program.
Now, is this like a college and pro system for the programs where a recruiter contacts you and says, hey, we're looking at your child as a prospect, or do you have to apply to something like this?
Let me go back and say, I left out Sauber.
Oh, Sauber, yes.
And, I left out Sauber accidentally. You know, there is a big question mark about them as well. I mean, nobody really knows exactly what that program is. I mean, they seem to take some people that any other quote unquote academy probably wouldn't take. So I don't know if it's a money situation, although they have a really super driver in Theo Pocher. And Theo, you know, I think they're probably supporting him pretty heavily this year. I don't really know what the end game is for it, whether they'll put him in a car, but there's Sauber as well. I totally forgot about that one. And where they fall on that kind of continuum that I created in my mind, I don't really know. I don't know much about them as well. But to answer your other question, yeah, so it's yeah, I think there are people. I know there's people out there that are watching, right? I know that Helmut Marko watches people. I know that Ferrari watches people. And I assume the other ones watch people as well. But it's not one of those things where you can really sit back and wait for somebody to come to you. I mean, if you're a really good 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old, whatever, you need to be out there trying to talk to them, trying to introduce yourself to them. You need to have somebody that, or you need to have somebody that can help you meet them, or you need to be proactive because, you know, I mean, even football in the United States, you know, that's our biggest sport, right? In the United States. So, you know, if you're trying to get into a college, you know, your coaches that you're playing football for, they send out tapes. They, you know, do things like that. I'm not suggesting you do those kind of things, but my point is you got to be proactive. You just can't sit back and hope that somebody comes to you.
We're talking here with Tim Crawford, talking about the driver academies, the driver programs, basically the what we would call an F1 farm system. But I want to take this over to Jack now. We know that Jack is with the Red Bull program, and you do have some stories. I do want to get in another segment, but let's talk a little bit about Jack's experience with getting noticed, not only by Red Bull, but by one other driver academy.
Yeah, so I don't think it's any big secret. He was 12 years old, and when we first took our first trip to Maranello, and I mean, that was interesting how it all came about. And you know, if we don't have time to delve into all of it, I'll save all of it for later. But what happened was we had somebody in the States track us down. I mean, Jack had just turned 12, and we got a phone call from somebody that said that they were doing a little work for Ferrari. And I know there's a couple of people going around in the States saying that. And I know one guy, you know, you got to be really skeptical of a few people that are calling you. And I was really skeptical of this guy that called me. And I thought he was out for money and he was, just up to no good. And so I was super skeptical of him. And then he was just persistent. He called me back, you know, later, and we formed up a friendship, and he never asked for money, just never, ever. And at one point I even saw an email exchange between him and one of the Ferrari guys at the Ferrari Driver Academy. So I knew he was legit. And towards the end of 2012, I guess it was, or 2017, rather, Jack was 12. That's where I got confused. But it was 2017. They really took notice. Jack had a really great end of the year. He was excelling in Legends cars. He was excelling in karts and karting. He'd won Super Nats. And so my goal was to keep him over here in the States running Legends cars for 2018. We were really going to go down a NASCAR path. We were hooked up with the guys that had promoted William Byron, and we were really going to go down a William Byron path and promote him into NASCAR. Hopefully it wasn't so, I mean, I'll be honest with you, it wasn't so much Jack, it was me really that was pushing him that direction. He was really good at the Legends car, and after he won the Super Nats, there was a team that offered to give him a free karting ride in Europe, and reluctantly I let him go. And it probably wasn't the best choice because the team was, you know, put, you know, they were, it was free for a reason, right? But the good thing is he got over there and the Ferrari guy got to take a look at him. And lo and behold, I got a call and I think it was March, about this time of the year, you know, late March. And they told me that they wanted me to come over and pick him up and drive him to Maranello. So I picked him up and I flew to Rome, picked him up in Naples, drove up to Maranello, And here he is, you know, 12 years old, not even 13 yet, and we're in the F1 building at Ferrari. We get our credentials and go up, and we're setting in Ferrari. So that was the first of three times that we ended up Ferrari. I'll just cut the story short there instead of going into it. But we had an opportunity with them, and we had an opportunity with Red Bull, and the Red Bull situation ended up working out a little more to our liking.
I definitely want to get more on those stories a little bit later on, but we're going to take a quick break. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, more with Tim Crawford on driver academies in Europe.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Continuing our conversation with Tim Crawford, father of Jack Crawford, on how everything works in Europe with driver academies or driver programs with Formula One teams. Now, we're just talking about how Jack got noticed by F1 driver academies and how it's like a collegiate process, you know, how you get contacted by a recruiter. Now, you guys joined Red Bull. Once you joined that, do they just have full control over where you race, you know, how you race, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, so going back to, remember I described how the 10 F1 teams
yes.
kind of work and their junior programs, right? How organized some are and how unorganized others are. We're with a program that they basically tell you where you're going to race, right? So mm-hmm. we don't have any choice. We could probably give our input. It may not be heard. But you know, in the contract we sign, and I'm not allowed to disclose anything about the contract.
Understandable.
Except that, you know, I will say that you know, they tell you where to race. And it's a positive thing. It's not a negative thing. You want to go where they want to go. And you know, they're spending money, so you want to make them happy, and you want to do what they want to do. Now, having said that, I mean, there are some drivers that, you know, go off the reservation, and you know, there was one driver this year that decided he wanted to race with a team that isn't normally in the Red Bull stable, and he went off the reservation a little bit. I don't know all the details of it, but so you know, Red Bull is one where they tell you where to race and what team to race for. And it's not that way with everybody else. I mean, I don't think that, for instance, the deal that Ugochukwu did with McLaren, that's going to be the exact opposite. I mean, they're basically the dad's in charge of that program. That's basically the rich man's program, where the dad does whatever he wants to do. And then at the end, if McLaren likes where he's ended up, they're happy and they take him. So it's all over the map, right? I mean, I don't think that all of them are telling their drivers where to race. Now, Ferrari is. Ferrari really likes to affiliate with Prima Motorsport or Prima Power Team, mm-hmm. an Italian team. Mm-hmm. They pretty much run all their drivers through that program. And it really is probably the best program out there. But that's who they're affiliated with. And then Red Bull affiliates with different teams as well. And that's probably the main benefit of a junior program. I mean, it, you know, there's two things that are the main benefit of the junior program. One is that you're aligned from an early age or whenever you get picked up with a team that wants to see you succeed. They want to see you in F1, just like you want to be in F1. So, you know, I can tell you right now that Red Bull's goals for Jack are the exact same as Jack's goals for Jack, right? Now, you may not always say that. I mean, that may, you know, at some point we may have diverging interests. I hope not. But right now our goals are exactly the same. So that's one of the benefits of being with the junior program. And then the second benefit is that they secure seats for you with teams. And Jack was on a really good F4 team last year. He's on a high level FIA F3 team. He's on a high level Euro Formula team. And those were all seats that were secured with the assistance of Red Bull. And so those are benefits. Those are really, to me, the two main benefits of being with the junior program.
And because of this, how close are you working with someone like Helmut Marko or Sir Christian Horner?
So Christian Horner, we haven't been able to interact with him at all. And when I say we, I mean Jack. So, you know, Christian Horner wants nothing to do with me, I promise you. But,
okay.
But you know, as far as Jack goes, he hasn't had any interaction with him for two reasons. One is he was at an F4 level, and they really don't take any notice, you know, at the F1 level until you get a little higher. But I suspect this year, if the coronavirus will allow it, I mean, last year was a little difficult with coronavirus because F1 was in their bubble and F2 and F3 were in their bubble, and the bubbles didn't really cross. You know, you couldn't have somebody from the F1 paddock crossing over to the F2 paddock or the F3 paddock. It was really difficult. But this year, I'm hoping it'll be a little bit better and there'll be some interaction. And if there is, you know, if Jack's doing well in FIA F3, he will probably get an invite to go spend a weekend in the F1 garage, right?
Mm-hmm.
The F2 guys definitely get to do that, and the FIA F3 guys are probably going to get a shot at it too, because they're right there. They're right there on the same weekends as well. But Helmut Marko is a different story. You know, he's a totally misunderstood man. If you listen to social media, I mean, you'd think that he was, you know, Lucifer's son, but he is, he's a genuine man. He's very nice. He always says what he means, and he always does what he says. He's that kind of a guy. And, you know, we just don't have anything negative to say about him at all. And, you know, it's just sad that he's gotten it's just sad about how social media treats people. And he's put more Formula One drivers on the grid than anybody. And, you know, we interact with him quite a bit. He'll talk to me about business. And he'll talk to Jack about racing. So that's kind of how it works. If he wants to do something with Jack, he'll call me and tell me ahead of time. He goes, look, I'm thinking about doing this, or I'm doing this. And, you know, he'll tell me about it, and we'll have a discussion about it. He's a funny guy. He's super funny. But Jack, you know, Jack's interaction with him is a little bit more about racing. Mm-hmm. So if he has something to tell Jack, he'll call and tell Jack, like, you know, work on this, or, you know, good job or whatever. Every time he wins a race, he'll get a text that says congratulations. So Jack actually has more interaction than me, but we'll interact with each other if there's a business term or something we need to talk about.
And that's got to be comforting as a father, having your son overseas. Having that figure there to not only support Jack in a racing role, but to communicate with you and say, this is what I have planned. Let's talk it over.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you just say yes, sir, to him, basically. Right.
But yeah,
I'm not trying to say we have a great relationship where we talk about things, but we do. I mean, there's plenty of things we've had discussions about that I can't say on mm-hmm. the podcast, because it'd just be breaking confident. But
right.
I mean, he tells you so much, you get so much out of him. But really, the whole Red Bull organization is just amazing. I mean, if you think about Red Bull, they sponsor more athletes in the world than anybody, and it's an athletes program. And so we're sitting here in the end of March, 1st of April, and just a week ago, Jack was over at the Athletes Performance Center in Austria. He spent 10 days there. And I mean, the number two guy in Red Bull hooked him up and sent him over there. gave them a place to live for 10 days. And, you know, they go to this performance center that is the best gym you've ever seen in the entire world. And, you know, they have nutritionists, they have mentalists, they have all kinds of different trainers, from cardio to, other things. And so they kept him busy for 10 days. They evaluated him. He did all kinds of stuff. So, and that's what Red Bull brings to the table. I'm not sure you could probably get that with anybody else. So it's a really great organization, and they really support their athletes.
I got time for one more question in this segment, and then we've got, why don't you stick around for one more, because I've got some other questions that are not really pertaining to the driver academies, but what kind of resources that Sergio Perez and Max Verstappen would get at the factory does Jack have with Red Bull?
Okay, so not a lot, right? I mean, right. The Red Bull, so there's Red Bull Racing, and Red Bull Racing is headquartered in Milton Keynes, England, right? Mm-hmm. So it's this big suburban warehouse kind of city. It's not a beautiful city like Oxford or anything like that. I mean, it's the utilitarian business city, right? And so they have this big F1, they have this big F1 building, and then they have another building like Red Bull Advanced Technologies, and they have a few other things on the street. And so they have, every now and then, you know, Jack gets an invitation to go to the F1 facility. He has an open invitation anytime he wants, actually, to go do the simulator. They have a F1 simulator, an old simulator. It's not the same simulator that Sergio Perez uses or Max Verstappen uses. It's a different simulator than their development, not development, but their F1 backup drivers or their reserve drivers use. But it's an F1 sim, and they run F4 and F3 and F2 and F1 on it. And so he has access to that. They have a gym facility there. And, you know, I already mentioned the athletes network that he has. And that's really the only thing that overlaps. You know, the marketing people are different people. The people that interact with us are all junior team people. So really the only kind of, you know, I guess we interact with some of the same people like Helmut Marko and maybe the guy that runs the simulator program and the people that are in the athletes trainer program, but they don't really cross pollinate, right? I mean, Red Bull Racing is the F1 program, and then you got the junior program as well.
All right, coming up next at Inside Open Wheel, we talk about F3 and Euro Formula next.
Scott's Law requires motorists to move over and slow down for police or any other emergency vehicles parked alongside the roadway.
These men and women are more than law enforcement officers, firefighters, paramedics, and construction workers. They are moms, dads, grandpas, sisters, brothers, aunts, and uncles.
Please move over for my dad.
Move over for my mom.
For my grandma. Move over for me.
Move over. It's the law.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
With Tim Crawford, father of Jack Crawford. Now, let's talk a little bit about what Jack's going to be racing this year. He's going to be doing both Euro Formula and FIA F3. What are the similarities between the two series?
Yeah, so, you know, if you kind of look at the stair steps up to F1, there's really only one stair step after FIA F3, and that's F2. And basically, you think about FIA F3, FIA F2, FIA Formula One, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the three big boys right there. Below that, you have really Formula Regional.
Yep.
And F4, all right? So those are kind of the five stair steps. So you have, let's start from the bottom. F4, Formula Regional, FIA F3, FIA F2, and FIA F1, right? So those are the five stair steps. There's other kind of things that are kind of on the peripheral that maybe aren't FIA sanctioned, or, well, there's FIA sanctioned, but they're not part of FIA's program that they created about 3 or 4 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. On the peripheral, you have Euro Formula. So Euro Formula has a great history. It's been around for forever. It's the only series that's still out there that I know of that runs more than one engine, right? So you have some teams running a Volkswagen, some teams run a Mercedes. If they wanted to run something else, they probably could, right? If they got it sanctioned. So it's the car is amazing. The Euro Formula car may be the best car that's out there. It's got a ton of downforce. It's got more downforce than anything but probably an F2 car. And it doesn't have a lot of power in the motor, but the downforce is amazing. So it's not so fast on the straightaway, but it's super fast in the corners, right? So that's the EFO car. And the talent level in the EFO series isn't quite as high. I mean, they're struggling this year to fill up the grid. You know, I'm hopeful they'll have a dozen cars, 15 cars, I hope. What's happened is FIA has consolidated the Renault program with the Formula Regional European Championship, and so that is the Formula Regional series that I mentioned right after F4, and it's got 30 cars on the grid, 36 cars on the grid, and that's kind of, they threw a bunch of super license points at that program, and they sucked the super license points away from the Euro Formula program. So that's the power of the FIA. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they were trying to kill Euro Formula or what they were trying to do, but I've gotten a little bit off topic here. I guess what I'm trying to say is the Euro Formula car is an amazing car. It's different than the FIA F3 car, though. The FIA F3 car still has a really good amount of downforce, but the engine is an amazing engine, and it has DRS, right? Mm-hmm. So whereas Euro Formula struggles a little bit with aero wash, or not a little bit, it struggles a lot with aero wash. And then the other thing I forgot to mention about Euro Formula is that the car is super light, right? So it's not a heavy car at all, super light car. You go to FIA F3, the car gets heavier, it gets faster, a little bit less downforce than EFO, but it has DRS, so the aero wash isn't as big of a deal. And that's kind of the differences between the two cars.
Now, also, it helps that this season, it's seven different rounds, triple header weekends. Now, normally, we see F3 and F2 together with F1, making a total package. This year, we're seeing it separate. One weekend may have F2, the other weekend may have F3. What is that like for someone like Jack to know they're not going to be at every F1 race, especially in Europe?
Yeah, so it's good and bad to get him in the, you know, F1 world. I mean, it's good because if he performs really well, there's a lot of eyes on him. If you know, he has a hiccup, then, you know, Helmut Marko is right there, you know. And you know, if he's good, he's going to be the first one to come and congratulate him and give him a fist bump. And if he performs badly, I mean, he gets to see everything right in the open, right? But it's not the first time he's raced in front of Helmut, and it won't be the last time. So, you know, that's maybe the good and the bad. I mean, we actually get to do one, or he gets to do one. I'm not trying to put myself in his spot, but he gets to do one one Formula One race with Euro Formula as well. So he does the Portugal race here in 30 days or so.
Oh, wow.
With F1 as well. So he gets a total of 8 times with the F1 paddock. The good thing about splitting them up this year is that the FIA F3 guys end up being the top billing when the F2 guys aren't there, right? Mm-hmm. So instead of all of the Formula One paddock watching and spectators, for that matter, if we ever get spectators back, is that, you know, F2 isn't the warm-up band, and F3's the, you know, the really bad band. Now F3 is the warm-up band, and you know, they come right before Formula One, so it puts a lot of eyes on them, and it's a really positive thing in my my estimation, to split them up like this.
And this year, we finally get a European Open Wheel Series to come over to the States. Jack gets a race in front of his hometown crowd this year at COTA during USGP weekend. And how much pressure is that going to put on him racing in an international series here in the States?
Jack, you know, I'm his dad, so you have to take everything I say with a grain of salt, right?
Right.
But Jack's a super cool, calm, calculated kid, right? He just, there isn't a lot that gets to him. There isn't a lot that gets under his skin. There isn't a lot to, you know, he's, it, you know, a lot of people that are going to be listening know him, and he's super calm and level, right? So he's not going to be too high, too low about it all. I will say that I think that if he's not at the top of the championship in points, then I think there's a little bit more pressure on him. And that I think that, you know, that could be interesting because he'll not only be coming home and thinking about the next year and his future and how it all plays out with Red Bull, but he'll be thinking, you know, he'll be thinking about Red Bull and he'll be thinking about being a home.
Yeah.
Whereas if he's, you know, doing well in the championship and everything like that, I mean, if your confidence is high, I don't think he's really going to think of it too much as pressure as a home race, right? So I think it just kind of depends on where he's doing at the end of the year. And, you know, we'll find out. I mean, they got to run the series. It's an interesting series this year. They basically they've created a really strange series where you have three races. The third race is the race that matters. So where you qualify, you start on pole for the third race and you get the most points. But the other two races are inverted races. So it's almost like, you know, running Legends cars or dirt race cars or whatever. They invert for the first race, they invert the first 12 in Formula 3. So if you qualify on pole, you start 12. And then for the second race, if you win, then you start 12, right? So it's just a unique format this year. And I think it's totally unpredictable. It really is probably going to benefit a lot of the mid-tier teams and things like that. So we can't predict where Jack's going to be by the end of the year, even though he's with a pretty top-level team. But to race 2.5 miles from your house, when all of his other races, he's got a total of like 48 races this year, I believe, maybe 49. I can't remember the number, 50, something like that. And to have the last three to be 2.5 hours from your house, I mean, that's pretty damn incredible, right?
Yeah.
So,
well, there's so much more we can cover, but we've got to cut for time. Tim, thanks for joining us. We've got to get you back on because just the stories behind this are great, and obviously we've got to get Jack on at some point. But thanks for taking the time and explaining to us about the driver programs in Europe.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy, for the invite. And you know, I hope I didn't make it too much about Jack, but I mean, we're having a great run here. We're really excited about everything, and hopefully we can get an American in the F1 paddock in a couple of years.
And that's always the goal here when we send our boys over to Europe. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Charlie and I talk about the latest Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series race at Richmond next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
We have missed two of the IndyCar e-races, the IndyCar Invitationals. I know Scott McLaughlin won the most recent one at Sebring. Not sure if his back's out of alignment or not. Did I make another Sebring joke? Oh, darn it. Darn it.
Well, you see, Jeremy, in the e-racing, you're not actually in the real car.
I know. I know. I'm still a little bitter over them messing with, you know, getting my new shoes all torn up. Remember that? Remember when I sent you that picture and you're like, what's that from? I go, a day walking around Sebring.
Huh.
Oh. Let's see.
Have you ever walked on the track after the end of the 12 hour?
No, I have not.
I remember walking through turn one at the end of the race and like, it's like you're at a stadium and somebody spilled soda on the concrete. Like you know how your shoes stick?
Oh yeah, I've had that. I've done that at Road America. I did that Road America Champ Car weekend, the last Champ Car weekend. Mm-hmm. Oh
yeah, it's crazy.
It really is. People, you know, you see the black marks on the track from the, you know, from the groove, but you don't understand it until you get on the track itself.
Mm-hmm.
Round two is won by Sage Karam. Get the kid a seat. I keep saying that. He deserves a ride. All right, so on to Richmond, 160 laps around the 3/4 mile bull ring in Richmond, Virginia. That I want that back on the schedule so bad.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know if we've talked on the show before or just between us, but yeah, I think this whole thing about when IndyCar goes to it, they didn't even go to it last year. Like, why? Mm-hmm. Why not try again this year? I don't get it.
I would not be surprised if it's back on the schedule as early as next season. Philip Kraus, Adam Blocker, Matt Kingsbury round out your podium. Andreas Eich, Andrew Kinsella, your top five. Riley Thompson, Ray Kingsbury, AJ Burton, Liam Quinn, and Andrew Roths, your top 10. Got to go back to 19th, 71 laps down for you, and it looks like you and David Adams finished on the same lap.
Well, I achieved my goal of finishing in top 20. Remember, that's my standing goal.
Yes, it is.
and so I did crash out of the race.
Okay.
But this time it wasn't my fault.
Was it David Adams' fault?
No, it was actually my teammate Tanner Watkins' fault. He just self-spun coming out of two, which is usually my job.
Yes.
and so what happened, it was honestly the most pathetic crash I've ever been in. So he spun, tapped the wall, and started, like, the wall kind of ricocheted him into the, like, towards the infield, right? So
right.
I'm like, okay, I'm just going to sneak between him and the wall, because there's a hole there, so I'm going to go through there. Another car, it might have been the other car that finished on my lap, hit him while he was sliding across the track, and that put him back into my way. But I was still, as I decided to go through that hole, I was on the brake, so I was slowing down. And I was probably going, like, I don't know, 60, 70 miles an hour by the time I hit him. But, you know, I mean, the on an oval, the car's tires are leaned up on the corners.
Yep.
So you can't hit, like, you hit the brakes and they lock up immediately. You can't stop. So I just, like, gently slid into him. But there was nothing I could do.
Okay. Fair enough. What about the weight jacker? How'd that work for you this time?
It was okay. I think the team purposely made an understeery setup just for me. So I took that and I was like, okay, this might be a little bit, I'll have to deal with the understeer, but at least I'm not going to crash. That worked out really well, but it was going okay. I mean, I was fighting understeer for the entire race, but at least I wasn't crashing until the end.
7 cautions for 34 laps. Philip Kraus coming away with the most bonus points. He led the most laps, led a lap, and took the pole position. Chris Demare and Ray Kingsbury also lap leaders. You told me something interesting that happened a couple of weeks ago that we seem to have missed about our winner.
Yeah, Phil Kraus joined Team Talent, which is my team. I think he enjoyed our interview so much that he decided to jump onto my team so that he could talk shit on me while we're racing. Not just when he comes on.
Oh, let's see. Is he on right now? Let's see here. I do not see him.
I don't think so. He said he was around. But putting me on booking is a bad idea.
Andreas Eich still leads the points. Adam Blocker, Philip Kraus move up one position right now. The point standings are pretty tight so far, with Andreas Eich leading by 2 points, then 5 points ahead of Philip Kraus. Andrew Kinsella falls back 2 points. He's still 9 points in arrears. Ray Kingsbury rounds out your top five. Chris Demare, Henry Bennett, Brian Carey, Matt Pauleski, and Joe Branch round out your top 10. You're still, I believe you're still achieving, well, you're 23rd, but... That's not bad.
Well, there's a long way to go, although I am going to miss a bunch of races in the summer. And I'm going to miss the next race, unfortunately.
Oh, you're going to miss the 500?
I am going to miss the 500.
Oh, no. What the heck's going on that you're going to miss the 500?
I have to go out of town. It's not a family tragedy, but a good friend had a family tragedy. So we have to go and spend some time with them.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah, so that's next weekend. We'll preview that. on Inside Open Wheel. There's a lot going on next week. I can tell you that right now. We were supposed to have Dane Neal on this week to talk about the history of Chicago street courses. We're going to move that to next week. Between his busy schedule and my emergency busy schedule, we just couldn't connect. So we'll connect later on. So that's, God, that's tragic. That's just, well, I could make it easier for you qualifying for the 500 and make a record and crash out in turn one for you.
Well, there's three other Indy 500 I can do on iRacing this year. So
yeah, we've got to talk about that one. We need to get with the iRacing people and talk about their Indy 500.
Mm-hmm.
I actually talked to Joe Branch. He listened to our show where we had the idea to do a pro-am, and he liked the idea. We'll talk more about that later. But cool. He noted that in every split last year, someone connected with the Indy Elite Series won this split.
Mm-hmm.
So,
no,
it doesn't surprise me either. So yeah, we're going to work with Joe on trying to get this pro-am together. Hopefully, Mike Kitchell, if you're listening, wouldn't be a bad idea to help out either with your connections. Just saying. Yeah, so then there's the long, I'm going to call it the Indy break, because you've got the start of the IndyCar season, the 500. Next race after the 500 is going to be the Elkhart Grand Prix, June 15th at Road America, the full course. And it's only 25 laps. Really, considering what it is, it's a shorty. But I might
space out for a second.
Yeah, I trust me. Sometimes I do that too, and I'm the one talking. But yeah, next week is the 6th annual Indy 500 presented by Catalyst 317. Maybe we'll get Kitch on. Hopefully, we can swap some good stories from the series. Oh, but other than that, after the next week is going to be pretty interesting too, because we're going to have the final results from the FRP race. They're running Thursday, Friday, Saturday this week because of the Easter holiday. So we'll have the results from the 1600s, 2000s, the 1000s as well. Get ready for the Indy 500 presented by Kalis 317. Also, hopefully we'll have Dane Neal on to talk about the history of Chicago street courses, how they've all been proposed, and the history of racing within Chicago. So for Kiffin Simpson, Tony Perella, and Tim Crawford, we thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel, as well as our driver analyst, Charlie Ante. I'm Jeremy Scott. We'll see you next week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest news throughout the United States Open Wheel Ladder System. And don't forget, next week, as we said, the 6th annual Indy 500 presented by Catalyst 317 will be on sim.tv. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.